What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it sucks to start the show off with some bad news, but unfortunately, if you're a basketball fan, which I am, Victor Wembanyama has been ruled out for the rest of the season, and it's not even due to like an injury that any of us saw coming. It's unfortunately he's got a blood clot in his right shoulder, and so he's out the rest of the season, and that's it. And it sucks just because, you know, he's been having a fantastic year offensively, defensively. He's been getting, you know, he's been doing the whole 4x4 scoring thing here where he's scoring in four different categories. I mean, he's just great. He's just been great to watch all season. You could just see him growing and growing each and every game. And then, boom, breaking news yesterday. We find out he is out for the rest of the season, and that just sucks. But it is also the game, and that's just how it is. He's expected to make a full recovery and be ready for next season. And it's not like the Spurs really had any playoff hopes, or they definitely had no championship hopes. It's maybe possible they could have magically had that nice little second half run and, you know, just barely made the playoffs or made the play-in tournament, but I don't even think that was even in their future. So get him all healthy for next year, and we'll see what they've got going into next year, because they're actually building a pretty decent squad right now. They're just probably another couple of role players away to building a really solid squad here, but just terrible news if you're just an NBA fan to hear yesterday. But since we are still in sports fan purgatory, you know, the NBA All-Star game, that is complete. The All-Star break is just ending now, so we didn't have a whole lot of games to discuss this week. And then, of course, you know, spring training is underway, and then, of course, the NFL is just dead zone right now. So I'm going to go ahead and throw out just some topics once again on this show with basketball, baseball, and football, just to have something to discuss right now, because we are in sports fan purgatory and ain't shit going on. So let me go with first my NBA topic. It's going to be my top five NBA championship contenders. These are going to be the five teams in order of who I believe are most likely to win the NBA championship from one to five. Those are the teams that I believe have the best shot at doing it. And really, I only kind of believe in, I think, my top three. I think my top three are the only ones that I truly believe in. The last two are just kind of, we'll see. So the number one team that I think has the best shot at winning the NBA championship this year, of course, is the Boston Celtics. They are the defending champions. They don't have to be the first place. They don't have to be the number one overall squad this year. They don't have to be the top in the Eastern Conference even. They don't have to be the top at anything. They've already won it. They have been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference over the last, what, five, six, 7 years. They've been in the playoffs. They've won championships. They know what it's like. So you just can't fall back on this team. They're healthy still. And even though they've had their slumps, they've worked their way out of their slumps. And it's just, to me, you look at them and they play well offensively. They play well defensively. They play well against the good teams. They play well against the shitty teams. And they don't usually get blown out. It's usually a pretty close game, you know, even if they do lose. However, they have had a couple of blowouts this year. But I'm just saying, for the most part, the Celtics play the most consistent basketball. And Jason Tatum, he's having another phenomenal year as well. And they're just the defending champs. So and to me, they really haven't lost a step. And so until somebody dethrones them, they are who I'm looking at to win it all. Then the second team I have in my top five NBA championship contenders, the second most likely, in my opinion, to win the championship, I have the Oklahoma City Thunder. I actually do believe in them this year. They have not given me a reason yet to not believe in them. I mean, they have been building this squad for the past couple of years, and they've had their pretty quick exits out of the playoffs, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case this year. I really do actually think the Oklahoma City Thunder are the best team in the league overall, even over the Celtics. Even though I picked them to win, more likely to win the championship, it's mostly because of their championship pedigree. Whereas the Thunder, I just think they're an overall excellent team. They play great offensively. They play great defensively. They've got SGA, their leader, who has just gone off this year. I mean, there is no debate on MVP at this current point in time. SGA is the MVP, and I don't see him losing a step. Then they just got Chet Holmgren back from injury. He's great in the paint. Then you got Hartenstein in the paint as well. And this is just a really, it's just a really good, talented team, and they really haven't shown any cracks at all in what they're building. So I just look at them and I feel like they're overall the best team. And I feel like they're definitely going to make some noise in the playoffs and be a legitimate championship contender and could potentially actually win this thing. Then the third most likely championship contender on my top five NBA championship contenders, I have the Denver Nuggets. This is the hottest team right now. They are really starting to get going offensively, defensively. Jokic has been doing what Jokic does, triple-double machine, as he always is. Russell Westbrook has actually been a solid piece for them so far. They've been getting all their dudes back from injury. They got Jamal Murray back. He's slowly been working his way back to old Jamal Murray form. They got Gordon still. So this is just a really solid squad. They are also a championship pedigree team. They've been in the playoffs. They've won a championship. So you just can't overlook this team. And then, of course, you've got Jokic, who is just an absolute dominating beast. I mean, he's having literally his best career year, and that says a lot because it feels like every year is a career year for Jokic. But I definitely look at the Nuggets as being probably the Thunder's biggest competition in the Western Conference. And they're in the same division as well, so they're going to be facing off against each other. They've already played each other quite a bit. But now I look at this Denver Nuggets team during this second half run here, and if they keep up what they did heading into the All-Star break, the rest of the league better be on notice, including the Boston Celtics. I think the Denver Nuggets, if they get fully healthy and play at the level that they are capable of, they are hands down easily going to roll over everybody because Jokic is just too much to handle for any of these teams. Then at number four in my top five NBA championship contenders, I have the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're a team I still have questions about. I still think they're a really good team. I still think they're definitely one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. But I feel like if they go up against the Boston Celtics in like a Eastern Conference Finals matchup, I feel like Cleveland's probably going to fold. It may not even be like a legitimate matchup just because I feel like Boston's that much better than them. But Cleveland has been very consistent all season long. They definitely have the players to get it done. It's just they haven't been there, so they don't really know what to do in these situations. But, I mean, you never know. And it is the Eastern Conference, and still, injuries can happen and many other things can happen along the way. But Cleveland, I still have some questions, but I will say, defensively, they are so much more improved than they've been over the last couple of seasons. That's exactly what they've needed to at least have a shot at making the championship. And they're at number four for me, of course. I actually take them seriously. It's just, you know, if they were to face off against Boston, I'm probably leaning towards Boston, just depending on how things lead up to the playoffs the rest of the season. And then rounding out my top five NBA championship contenders, you know I had to throw them in there, and that's my Los Angeles Lakers. I don't really believe they're going to win a championship. I still think they've got a lot of work to do. They still have that problem of just throwing up the threes and then completely disappearing on defense. And now that we don't have Anthony Davis anymore, we don't have a lot of margin of error when it comes to the defensive side of the ball because he was such a dominating force defensively. So that could end up being a problem. Luka, you know, he's coming back from the calf injury, so he's obviously not 100%, especially at the three-point range, which is just hilarious because that's been my huge issue with the Lakers all season is their three-pointers just throwing them up for no absolute reason and continuously missing them, and that's what he's doing right now. But, I mean, overall, I think the progression is going to be nice. He's definitely going to have to work his way back from the injury, but Luka and LeBron are both number one players, and they're definitely going to complement each other well. You can already tell that they are complementing each other well in the first couple of games that they've played with each other. So we have the rest of the season to see if they got it. But it's not just Luka. It's Austin Reeves has been having a great year, and he's just been getting better as the season wears on, and he's actually been playing well when he's the leader of the pack, which is something I like to see because, you know, there's been a couple of games where LeBron has sat out, and he's been the dude. He's been the guy who's been basically taking charge of the team and leading them to the wins. And I like really seeing that from a guy who's technically like number three on the team. You know, of course, he's definitely behind LeBron and he's definitely behind Luka. And he was behind Anthony Davis before we traded him away as well. But it's nice to see him really starting to step it up. And so I look at him as being that third guy who could start really scoring some points and being a threat. But it's the Lakers on the defensive side of the ball where I have a lot of issues. And I also still think they need to work out some things. But, I mean, the talent level is there. And honestly, anything is really possible with LeBron and Luka because the two of them are top-notch players. And to act like they aren't is ridiculous. But they are both top-notch players. And if Luka gets, because by playoff time, Luka should be pretty damn healthy if he continues to progress on as he's expected to do. So Lakers come playoff time could be completely healthy with a healthy LeBron, or as healthy as LeBron could be because he has been battling through that foot injury, but that's going to be bothering him all the way through the end of the season. He's already said that. But you got LeBron as healthy as he could be. You got Luka healthy. You got healthy Austin Reeves. I kind of look at those three guys, and they could be a complete force. It's just, we'll see what happens defensively. And like I said, that's just more of a long shot to me. It's just they definitely have the talent with Luka and LeBron. Moving on to baseball. And for the baseball topic, I've decided to go with the top five changes that are coming up this season. And the changes, they aren't necessarily players who are being traded or of that nature. It's mostly, actually, a couple of guys are going to be moving positions. There's actually a position battle right now because, you know, since spring training just started this week, so we're getting some new information that we weren't really aware of. Then it looks like a superstar is going to be out on the free agent market next year, so it looks like we're going to have another crazy year. You know, we had Soto last year. We had Aaron Judge and Otani, and it's just crazy, but it looks like we're going to have another guy out there. We have a new manager who's been around the block. Is he going to turn around another team? And then it looks like we might have a potential rule change coming up here as well. So we've got quite a few changes coming up in the baseball season. So let's begin with number one on my top five changes for the upcoming season. Mike Trout, he is going to be moving from center field to right field and designated hitter as well. There's going to be some games where that's all he's going to do because, you know, Mike Trout has been one of the best five-tool players this game has ever seen. But unfortunately, over the last 5-6 years, he's suffered some debilitating injuries, not just these sprains and strains like ACLs and just things that take you out of the game for the rest of the year. And so they need to do something to kind of take the wear and tear off of him for the tail end of his career. Because, I mean, if you remember last year, he was on fire until he got injured, and he suffered his injury and just was never able to come back. So center field is definitely a lot more wear and tear on your body as opposed to right field and just playing designated hitter. So he's completely open to it as well. He's happy with this move, and he knows it's for the better of his health. So hopefully we're going to get to see more Mike Trout this year, just because, like I said, last year he started off last year like he was the old Mike Trout. Then he got injured, and it was just boom, off a cliff there from there, and he just never even came back. I think he was injured in like May or June, so he missed a good portion of last year. And then the season before that, and it just kind of feels like he's been missing a lot of playing time lately. And so if he's just, honestly, even if he were just relegated to the designated hitter, that's better than nothing because he could still crank and yank that ball, and he is definitely a force from behind the bat. But you definitely want his defense as well because he is absolutely fantastic in the outfield. It's just center field, you got a lot more chance of getting injured because you got a lot more ground to cover. So we'll see what happens with Mike Trout moving from center field to right field and the DH role. Then the second change on my top five changes for the upcoming season, this actually came as a surprise to most everybody. And so the Boston Red Sox, they actually just signed Bregman. They signed him last week or just right before spring training started. And he was one of the big guys out there. You know, the Cubs were going after him. Houston was going after him, but they weren't really willing to pay him a lot of money. But the thing about Bregman is he's great defensively and he's great offensively, and he's definitely going to bring in some championship pedigree as well. But the problem is that Alex Bregman primarily plays third base. He has moved around a little bit in the infield, but he mostly plays third base. Well, the Red Sox have a player named Rafael Devers, and if you're a baseball fan, you know he's a pretty goddamn good player. He's excellent behind the bat, but he also plays for the Boston Red Sox at the third base position. And on the first day of spring training, he was asked, is there going to be some type of switch? And he straight up said no. He's already told the Red Sox he ain't moving, and ultimately, of course, he doesn't have any say in the decision. I mean, the coaches are going to do what the coaches are going to do. That's what they're there for. And honestly, if you're comparing the two, Alex Bregman is a much better defender at third base than Devers is. Devers is great behind the bat. He's going to score you some runs. He's going to get you some home runs. He's going to do some damage behind the plate. At third base, he has had his issues, especially last year. He had a few follies last year. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. You know, Bregman's come right in and he said, you know, I'll play wherever they want me to. But I kind of feel like he was told he was going to be playing third base. And I won't be shocked if we see some switcheroo-skis at certain points of time of Bregman playing third and Devers DHing. But Devers did not look like he was willing to budge on the topic, at least in his press conference earlier in the week. Topic number three on my top five changes in the upcoming baseball season. Vlad Guerrero Jr. looks like he's going to be a free agent next year. This is going to be his last year with the Toronto Blue Jays, at least on this current contract. He could always re-sign with the Blue Jays. They were apparently in contract negotiations all offseason. Nothing came to fruition, and basically Vlad said, I'm cutting, there's a deadline. The deadline is spring training. The day spring training starts, we are not doing any contract negotiations. Now, this does not mean he will not re-sign with the Blue Jays, but this opens up the doors for anybody to sign Vlad Guerrero. And like I said, we just had Soto on the market. We've had Aaron Judge on the market. We've had Bryce Harper on the market. We've had so many big-time dudes on the market over the last couple of seasons. It kind of feels like, God, we've had a big-time player on the free agent market the last, feels like at least five, six, maybe even seven seasons. And here we are. It looks like Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to be the next one. He's definitely going to be heavily sought after. As a San Francisco Giants fan, would love to see them go after him, but that's for next year, of course. But who knows? He may even get traded as well, because usually, you know, a guy on the last year of his contract, it's always a good idea to maximize what you can. And if the Blue Jays don't think they're going to re-sign him next year as a free agent, well, then you should trade him and see if you could get some type of value for him. And obviously they will, because he is Vlad Guerrero Jr. He is one of the top-notch players in the league, 100%. So they definitely could get a pretty big pull for him. But at the same time, he's putting some asses in the seats as well. He's been a very consistent player since the day they brought him up from AAA. He has been 100%. He's been a great player. That's just all there is to say about it. Other than his injuries, that's the only thing you could say about him, is his injuries are an issue. But that, you could say that about a lot of players. But when he's healthy, he is one of the best players on the field offensively and defensively, and he puts asses in seats. And so you're going to want to do that. But at the same time, the Blue Jays do have quite a few really good players on their teams. And definitely going to be coming up for contracts and all that. So if they don't want to re-sign him, I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up getting traded at some point prior to the trade deadline. Then the number four change on my top five changes for the upcoming season is Terry Francona is back. And this time around, he is managing the Cincinnati Reds. I think this is going to be one of his toughest tasks he's probably ever had. You know, he notoriously changes around every single organization he has taken over at the manager position. He went to the Boston Red Sox, and not only did he completely turn them around, but they also won a couple of World Series as well. Then he goes to the Cleveland Indians. Looks like they're just a mid-tier, bottom-of-the-barrel team. He gets them to the World Series. They don't win it, but they get to it, and they were a regular in the playoffs as well. They were almost always, I think they were in the playoffs the majority of this time. I can't recall every year, but I know he went to the playoffs the majority of his time. when he was the manager of the Indians. So he retired last year, took the year off, and then he decided to come back, and he is managing the Cincinnati Reds this year. I think this is a great opportunity for him. He obviously wouldn't have come back if he didn't think it was a good opportunity himself. I mean, they do have a pretty nice young squad. I mean, overall, the Reds have been the worst team in baseball, right down there with the Oakland A's, or now the Sacramento A's. But they've been one of the worst teams in baseball for quite some time. They really haven't had any, they haven't been good. Straight up, they just haven't been good. And so he does have his pick of the litter with some nice young up-and-comers. Of course, Ellie De La Cruz, that's their superstar. You know, he's a fantastic player. But you also got Spencer Steer, and you got a couple of other young cats out there who I think he's going to help bring up in the game. And the thing about Terry Francona is he is beloved around baseball. And anybody who plays for him has nothing but nice things to say about him. He's what you would call a player's manager. He is a player's guy. He used to be a player, so he knows what it's like. And he's, you know, got the championship pedigree, and he's turned around every single team he's ever went to. So it's going to be interesting to see what he's able to do with the Reds. I wouldn't be shocked if they actually have a quick turnaround. Wouldn't say they're going to win a championship this year, but hey, maybe they could win their division, or maybe they could just be a wild card team. Who knows? But he does have quite a bit of talent to work with, and who knows? Maybe they'll make some trades or something along the way. And like I said, you got a player like Vlad Guerrero Jr. who's potentially going to be available next year, and maybe they're going to want to go out and spend that money. I doubt it, because that's not really what the Reds are about, but I'm just saying that I wouldn't be shocked if Francona has a pretty quick turnaround here with the Cincinnati Reds. And then the last on the top five changes for the upcoming season, the last topic is a potential rule change. It's right now only being implemented during spring training. But don't be shocked if it actually, you know, is implemented immediately at some point in the season this year in Major League Baseball. They don't usually do that, but it's actually had it's been a very positive change so far. And that is what is known as an automated ball strike challenge. They're beginning this in spring training. Actually, the first one just happened, I believe, yesterday, and it was a successful challenge as well. Basically, you're going to be able to challenge the strike zone, which is nice because, you know, sometimes these umpires have very shoddy strike zones. And the rules are fairly simple. You get two challenges, and only the pitcher, the catcher, and the manager can challenge. So it's not like some dude from center field could be like, yo, I want to challenge that. Only those three who have control of the strike zone, basically, those three have to be in sync and say, hey, I want to challenge that. But right now they're trying it out in spring training. They tried it out last year in the minor leagues, and it actually had I believe it was a 53%, 54%. It was over 50% success rate on challenges. So it's not like it's really wasting anybody's time. And it's computerized as well. It's just like instant replay, but it's the strike zone instant replay. So it should be fairly quick. It should be fairly easy. Like I said, it's not expected to be implemented this year. It would be more likely next year it would be implemented. But, you know, if they actually have, I think if they have like a really successful spring training with it, why would they not implement it? But, you know, it kind of feels like anytime they implement these rules, they slowly move up from minor leagues then to spring training and then to the regular season. But, you know, I don't think it would be a bad thing if they have nothing but positive things to say about it during spring training. Now moving on to my NFL topic, and it's going to be the top five players on the move. This is not going to include Myles Garrett and Cooper Kupp because I just talked about them last week. But these are all guys who are either going to be available via free agency. There's scuttlebutt that they may be traded, and also they could be potentially released. And these are five pretty heavy hitters as well. I mean, it was actually pretty difficult to whittle this down. And like I said, this doesn't include Myles Garrett and Cooper Kupp, and those are two top tier guys as well. So number one on my top five players on the move, I have Davante Adams, and it's expected that the New York Jets are going to release him. And if he gets released, I mean, it don't matter what anybody says. Davante Adams is still one of the best receivers in the league. He's got some of the best hands. He is one of the most solid, amazing route runners you are ever going to see. Great at the deep ball. I mean, there really is not a negative thing you could say about Davante Adams. And he's going to add a positive role to your team. So whoever picks up Davante Adams is going to get a top-tier, fantastic player. The Jets have to release him first, which they have not done yet, of course, because we still have some time before that happens. I think we have about a week until all of that's the movement for free agency begins, and then I believe it's the March 10th, I believe, is when the free agency period begins. So we have about 2.5 weeks until the free agency really gets going. But I expect to see Davante Adams out there at some point, because it's obvious that the Jets are completely revamping this team, as to be expected. And with Davante Adams out there, expect a lot of teams to be going after him. But the good thing for him is he's going to have his pick of the litter. He's going to be able to say, I want to go here, I want to go there, because he is reliable, he is fantastic, and he's not a diva. He's not going to cause you any issues. He really just goes to work and just does his thing. He's just a great wide receiver, and whoever gets him is getting a fantastic guy. And I would not be shocked if it's on like a Super Bowl contending type team where he is able to go for a championship, because that's basically all the dudes are missing at this point. Then at number two on my top five players on the move is Deebo Samuel. Now, he was basically the first player announced that is able to seek a trade. Him and the 49ers came to an agreement that, hey, if you want to get out of here, go ahead and see if you can find somebody who is interested in trading for you. And if the trade works out, then that's what we're going to go with. And Deebo Samuel, even though he's been injured over the last, he's just a very injury-prone player. When he's on the field, he is a game breaker and a game changer, and he offers an element that other receivers don't, and that is, not only can he run, but he runs like a bruiser. He's not like that finesse type of running guy. He's not just trying to run on the wing or anything like that. Or just try and outrun defenders. He's actually like willing to take on defenders head on. So he's definitely going to be that dude who offers you a different type of wide receiver. So, you know, there might be some teams that I kind of feel are just right there on the cusp of a championship, or just kind of missing out on somebody. I mean, imagine him with like the Buffalo Bills, for example. Because the Bills, they were a very solid team this year, but they were obviously missing a number one receiver. So let's say the Bills go after a Davante Adams or a Deebo Samuel. They get one of those dudes, and that completely changes the trajectory of this team. But I feel like Deebo Samuel would probably fit perfect on a team like the Buffalo Bills, because they are a bruiser type of team, and they've got a good offensive line. They've already got a nice ground attack. He'd have a solid quarterback. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with this, but I'm just throwing it out there. He's going to be a great piece for a team that is just right there on the cusp of winning a championship. Then at number three on my top five players on the move is defensive end Joey Bosa. He's with the Los Angeles Chargers, and they're expected to release him as well. You know, he's battled through the injuries as well. He is Nick Bosa's older brother, so he's got a couple more years under his belt. But he's still a fantastic defensive end when he's out there, especially. So whoever gets him is definitely going to get a solid defender. And there's also the possibility, who knows, maybe the Niners would be interested in signing him, and then they'll have both of the Bosa brothers on one team, and then we'll have two defensive ends who are brothers. I wonder if that's ever happened. I mean, we've had T.J. Watt and J.J. Watt, but they didn't play on the same team. But that would be interesting to see Joey Bosa and Nick Bosa on the same team. But I'm sure a lot of suitors will be going after Joey Bosa if he becomes available, which more than likely he's going to be. Then at number four on my top five players on the move, I'm sure not a lot of people know this name, but he's definitely going to be one of the most sought-after guys if he hits the free agency market, and that is offensive guard Trey Smith. He is basically the only good offensive lineman on the Kansas City Chiefs, so it's kind of odd that they're not really going after him. It sounds like that they are willing to let him go. At first, it sounded like they were about to re-sign him, and then out of nowhere, it just kind of looked like maybe things broke down at some point. Maybe he just wants to try out free agency, but regardless, he's been their only consistent guy on the offensive line. And if you watch the Super Bowl, which I know a lot of people did, you saw Patrick Mahomes on his ass the whole time. And part of that was because he had a terrible offensive line. So not sure why the Chiefs wouldn't want to re-sign this guy, but whoever gets him is definitely going to be getting a really solid guard. And then at number five on our top five players on the move, I think this is a long shot. I really don't think this is going to happen, but you are seeing the rumors about it. And it wouldn't shock me, really, if it happened, simply because he is one of the, quote, older quarterbacks. But I do kind of feel like the team that has him currently is tied to him and wants to remain tied to him. And that is Matthew Stafford. You know, he's looking for a new contract, of course. But there's been rumors he might get traded. And that would be very, very interesting because Matthew Stafford is one of the top quarterbacks in the league. There is no question about that. So if he's available, I mean, I'm sure a team like the Raiders would love to pick him up, or the Pittsburgh Steelers. Oh, my God. If he went to the Steelers, he basically is like the missing link for them. I mean, yeah, they wouldn't have him longer than probably like 3-4 years, but they get a dude like Stafford. That's a total game changer for a team that really is basically missing a good quarterback. So if Matthew Stafford ends up on the move, lots of teams are going to be very interested. But to me, I kind of feel like the coaching staff loves him. The front office loves him. I think he likes being there. I think he likes the team. I think he's enjoyed his entire experience there. And I just don't feel like they want to move on from him. But hey, you never know what's going to happen just because it is the NFL. And, you know, sometimes these contract situations, they just get out of control. And sometimes you just got to let people go. Sometimes you got to trade them, or sometimes you just re-sign them. But I think Matthew Stafford's more of a long shot. But I would not be surprised if he does end up getting traded somewhere. And then the last bit of NFL news that we have, it actually has nothing to do with players on the move. I mean, technically he is, but he hasn't officially announced it, but he's basically let the team know, and all of the news, the Dallas news sources have announced it, and so it's probably going to be happening here, I would imagine, on Monday or Tuesday is when the press conference is going to happen. But it looks like offensive guard Zach Martin of the Dallas Cowboys is going to be retiring after 11 years of football. Not surprising at all. The dude, he had an injury-riddled season. I mean, this year was a very hard year to watch him play just because you could tell it was a burden to bear for him. But other than that, this guy has been one of the most reliable offensive linemen in the history of the league. And that is not just the Cowboys fans saying that. That is the stats saying that. Let me tell you the number one stat about Zach Martin that matters more than anything if you are an offensive lineman. In his entire 11-year career, he only had 7 holding penalties. Yeah, 7. You know, some dudes can have 7 holding penalties in one game. He only had 7 holding penalties his entire career. That in and of itself is one of the most impressive stats you will ever see as an offensive lineman, because that is just discipline right there, 100%. He blocked for Tony Romo and Dak Prescott. Those were his starting quarterbacks. Obviously, we had other stupid backups in between there, but those were his dudes he blocked for. But I mean, he was a 9-time All-Pro, 7-time first team All-Pro, 2-time second team All-Pro. The 7-time first team All-Pro actually ties him for the most at the offensive guard position. So, I mean, that just goes to show you how reliable he was every single year. It did not matter how good or bad his team was. He was always exceptionally consistent every single game he played. As a matter of fact, he didn't start getting injured until recently. He was a total workhorse. He started, I believe, like 165 games or something crazy like that. But basically, he started every game for the most part up until this season. And he was just a great player to watch. Sucks to see him go, but like I said, I am not shocked at all, just because the season he had, you could tell the injuries were really getting to him. Even the games he was playing in, you could tell he was probably playing really, really hurt. And I was watching him all season like, oh God, I think this is it for Zach Martin, especially after, you know, when the season started to crumble. Even Michael Parsons is like, you know, we just want to win for guys like Zach Martin because he just hasn't been to the Super Bowl, and we want to win for him because we know he doesn't have a lot of time left. And that right there signaled to me that this was probably his last year, and it's going to be made official probably at some point next week, but it's all but official, other than coming from his mouth, but it's pretty much official. So to Zach Martin, you know, thank you for everything you did as a Dallas Cowboys fan. I appreciate you. I enjoyed your career, and we'll see what you do in the future. Who knows? Maybe you're going to be a coach, or maybe you're just going to sit your fat ass down and rest up, because you, I know, were beat up as hell this year, and you deserve to take some time off. But we really, at least I really appreciated what you did for the Dallas Cowboys. All right, y'all, enjoy the rest of the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.